Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, how's it going? Happy, happy Monday. Oh, man, it's been an amazing, amazing day for me. I don't know about you guys. Weekend was real busy. We had a lot of fun this weekend. We had Halloween. I hope you guys didn't eat too much candy. And, I hope you guys got a lot of treats. I was kind of sad this year. I didn't have any little ones to take trick-or-treating. Hopefully Mountain Man. Mountain Man, you there? See if he's
Mountain
like
Man's here.
Mountain Man's in the house. Hey, Mountain Man, how's it going?
Good. How's everybody doing here?
Oh, man, we're doing awesome, awesome. I'm telling you, this year was so different because I actually wasn't home for Halloween, which was, like, weird because I'm usually here. Now that the kids are all grown, I'm usually here giving candy out. So I didn't give candy out this year, so I was shocked that I came home and I didn't find, like, eggs everywhere. So my neighbors were kind of cool about that. But I did have fun. I'm telling you, we went to Baker Boy Productions. They put on Lance. He's an amazing genius. He has, oh, man, his imagination is wild. He actually put on they hired him to do a haunted theme thing over at the Liberty Hotel in Boston.
Oh, believe me, I wish I was there with you guys.
Oh,
man. I probably would
have
had an awesome time.
I'm telling you, for our listeners, if you want to take a look-see, go up to my Facebook and go under Charlie Alejandro, and you'll see the pictures there. You'll have to become my friend, though, for you to see them. So. But they're really awesome. I'm telling you, the makeup people were amazing. Some of the stuff looks so real and so disgusting, and when I took pictures of it, it looked even more real. It was cool. I even did some trick photography. I did some black and white so they look like crime pictures, you know, like crime scene pictures.
Yep.
I made some of them look older, so like from back in the day. No, but they did an amazing job, all the people. I wish I could remember all of them. Allie and Mike and Sarah and Justin, Jeff. Oh, man. Shelly and Joe. There was tons more, and I hate the fact that I can't remember everybody. But if you guys go to Facebook, check it out, you'll see all the pictures. They just did a phenomenal job. Now, for those of you that don't realize, the haunted house, it was called Pandemonium. The pandemonium went on from, yes, and it was crazy because it went on from 8 at night to 2 in the morning.
Wow.
And the person that came in at 8 at night has to expect the same thing that the person got at 1:45 a.m. So they kept their energy up, and I'm talking about, oh, and of course, Gianna, how could I forget her? She was the creep my
friend. Come on.
She was awesome. And the thing is, I mean, of course, this is a place that's supposed to be haunted and creepy and all this, so they're yelling and they're making the noises and they're just keep, it was amazing. I mean, they just kept the energy up the whole time. It was a real good time. It was a real good time. And we probably had over 500 and something people go through it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of people.
It was. They sold out early. There was actually people, it was so funny, there was these girls that wanted to go in so bad, they actually offered to pay $40 each to go into the Pandemonium's creep show.
Really?
Yes. Because they had heard
wow.
so much good things about it. And it was just amazing, the lights, the whole effects. The big hit of the night was there's one section where you walked into and they actually did a reenactment of Thriller. They had dancers there.
That
dressed up
good.
Like the zombies. Yeah, they had the guy, they had lead dancer dressed up like Michael Jackson, and they just, imagine that. I mean, you're doing the same dance over and over again for about 5.5 hours.
That is
and
a long time.
It was, but they were just amazing. They kept the energy up, and it was great. So, yeah, it was a good time. And for those of you that weren't able to come, you missed a good time. Hopefully next year you'll be able to go. With that, talking about energy, Motivational Monday. Hey, Mountain Man.
Motivation Monday.
Yes, we got to be motivated. I was so motivated this morning because, as our listeners remember from Friday, Cardiac started his show today. He was on 101.3 FM, Big City Boston. Whoop, whoop, shout out. And my girl Asia, oh, man, they killed it. I was up at 5:30 this morning. I gave him a quick call just to wish him luck, and I listened in on the show. For our listeners, if you want to hit it in the morning, it's 101.3 FM. You can hear it from your radio dial. Great chatter going on there in the morning, very motivational, and it's kind of fun. I mean, they just clown around. It's a good feeling to have a smile on your face as you're driving to work. But the other cool thing is you can hear it online, too. If you Google 101.3 FM Big City Boston, they'll pop up. You can hear it at your cadence, which means, you know, you can hear it live, or you can hear some of the older shows. Yeah, they did a really great job. And,
awesome.
My man Cardiac went off to a running start. I was real proud of him. He did a really great job.
And
had
he
a lot
is
of people
a wild
calling.
Man, too.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, my girl Asia, she had him on his toes. She is a riot. And not only that, she's smart, too. So she went from joking around to they had a lot of politicians come in because tomorrow's election day in the city of Boston. Yeah, so make sure you guys, if you're in the Boston area, get the vote out. Get it out and vote. So they had
even
a few politicians come in. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's one of the things that that is the thing that I want to talk about, Motivational Monday. People, get out and vote. You can't stand around, and I like the fact, because actually I got this from 101.3 FM, one of their PSAs that they were saying, no one can take the right from you to vote. It was given to you. It was something that was fought for very hard, and
mm-hmm.
do not take it for granted. You can sit around and blame everybody else for your problems. You can blame the government. You can blame the mayor, the council, the everybody. But the reality is, if you get involved and if you vote, and don't tell me that one vote doesn't make a difference, because we've seen many elections where it did make a difference. As a matter of fact,
mm-hmm.
John F. Kennedy, the reason he went on was one vote. Not to president, but in the primary. So, yes, it does make a difference. A few years back, we had our first black candidate in the city of Boston. He won the primary by one vote. So one vote
mm-hmm.
does make a difference. And, of course, if you get active on top of that one vote, then absolutely you're going to bring people to the polls and you can actually make a difference. So exercise that right for those of you that might take
and
it for granted.
And your vote does count.
Absolutely. And what counts the most is, and we've got, you know, Veterans Day is going to be coming up. We have a great show scheduled for then. We have a couple of veterans that are going to come on and talk and share some of their stories with us and their life and how they've adjusted to coming back from war. But they went out there, these young men and women went out there to give us our freedoms, to fight for us. And we might think that it's not our war, but it is. I mean, it is now. It always has been. And whether we agree with it or not, whether we like the people in power or not, that's not the point. It's about supporting our men and women and the fact that they are actually putting their life on the line somehow, made the ultimate sacrifice, to give us the freedoms we have here in this country now. So please do not let them go to waste. Exercise your right to vote. Exercise your right to get involved. Exercise your freedom of speech. Exercise your freedom to call the editor of the local paper, write a letter, call your senator, call your congressman. Anything that bothers you, call them. That's what they're there for. I know it sounds kind of like a gimmick when you're like, well, I pay your salary. Well, technically we kind of do, you know, the taxpayers. So you might as well get your money's worth. And, I mean, of course, it's like if you're calling every time there's a pothole down the street, they kind of don't take you that serious. But there's a lot of really great issues out there, especially now with the recession. There's been a lot of cuts, a lot of cuts. So please pick up the phone, make those phone calls, get involved, and I hope that you guys stay motivated to make a difference. Be a voice for different people. Yes, that's my spiel today. I am so excited. Guest 3225, welcome to the chat room. I'm really excited about our guest that we have today. We're going to have a couple of guests come in, so we'll leave it as a surprise. Jill White will be along later if you guys read the bio. Very interesting young woman. And I think it was interesting for me how we met.
Exactly.
I don't advise you to do this.
And I heard a little rumor here that he's going to be performing in a show.
No, he actually, no. What it is he's just, Joe's going to call in, and then God knows who else calls in. You know how it is. People call in, and then random people call. You never know who's going to call. You know, I have a couple of deadbeat people from my past that might decide they want to call in and stuff, so you never
know. Hold on a second. I'm going to mute myself for a second.
Okay. So while Mountain Man is muting himself, I'm really excited about meeting Joe, and like I said, I don't recommend you do this. Joe and I actually went back and forth online for a while, just getting acquainted, Facebook. We did a lot of networking because he's in the acting industry, and finally he said to me, you know what, he's like, I have a script I'd like you to read, and I did, and he wanted us to do a read-through. Of course, I met with him somewhere, and always do it wisely. I brought my husband with me, made sure it was in a public place, and thank God he wasn't a mass murderer. He was actually a legit person. No, actually, Joe's a really nice guy. But it was a fun time. I got to meet some amazing people, and I was really excited about the whole process. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting Joe.
Well,
to remind our listeners, is that you, Mountain Man?
That's me.
What are you doing? You're rummaging around the switch room again.
Exactly. It didn't work. Didn't work. So anyways, to remind you listeners, and then I'll click this caller in here.
Yes. So just Wednesday, oh, man, I'm so excited. We have Eric Eastman in the house. Woo-woo, talented actor. And then luckily Thursday I get to go see one of his full feature-length movies that he was in called Bridge Crusaders. People, do not miss it. It's going to be at the Arlington Regent Theater, and it's on Medford Street, and it's at 8 o'clock, and I think it's like $7 for the movie. There's going to be some belly dancers in the house doing some amazing exhibitions and a few other ones, so you're going to miss a good time, so make sure you come down. My man Mark Wood's going to be in the house interviewing some of the guests and stuff, so yeah, definitely come down. It'll be a good time, so I'll be excited about that. Mountain Man's leaving us on Thursday. Yes, he's going to be going into the hospital, so guys, keep him in your prayers. Send positive energy and good thoughts and stuff. And, yeah, and then Friday I'll be doing solo. Actually, my show's going to go on the road. I think it's kind of cool. I'll actually be going to Philadelphia this weekend to visit some family. Yes, I'm so excited. I can't wait. So, yeah, we're going to take this show on the road. It'll be interesting to see how that works. But, yeah, so Mountain Man, who do we have waiting in the wings?
I'm not sure. I'm going to click him on.
Click him on. Let's see who's there.
Good evening. You're live on the Diamond in the Rough show. Who's this,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, Charlie Beth.
Hey, who's this?
It's Ricky Rivera, civil and private investigator for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Okay, Vic, listen, Ricky, I told you, listen, just because you and I worked together before doesn't give you the right to be calling me on the end. I told you about this. Now, what are you up to now? Do you want money? Is that what it's all about?
I woke up in a doctor's office again this morning.
Listen, Ricky, I told you, you can't be doing that. You're going to get busted. Now, you know, I've done you a lot of favors because, you know, you and I were on the job, and, you know, our pops were family and all. You know, they were always hanging out, but you can't be doing this crap anymore. Now, what did I tell you about that?
I thought I was chasing a guy in there. Next thing I know, I wake up and I didn't know where I was.
And who are you chasing again? You're not a cop anymore. When are you going to get it through your head?
I'm a civil and private investigator for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I chase people still.
Oh, yeah. Whoop-de-doo. Who do you chase? Private investigator stuff. Who the heck would hire you anyway with your reputation? Are you crazy? Ain't no one going to hire you.
I got a job. Some guy called me from Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, right. And what, he wants to put you in his movie? Or no, wait, next thing you're going to tell me, you wrote a script and it's going to make a bazillion dollars, right? Oh, and I guess you like me so much you might have actually put a part in it for me? Come on, Ricky, get real. Really? That doesn't happen. That's make-believe.
I'm the next Matt Damon. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. And I'm J-Lo standing. Please, give me a break, will you, please? Mom,
anyway.
Man's laughing.
You've got me cracking up over here, you two.
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, hon,
right,
what is going on?
Take the Ricky mask off here.
Yeah, he's taking the Ricky. Oh, man. For our listeners, that is my man, Joe White. I'm telling you, actor, writer, extraordinaire. I am just in awe of this man's talent. You can't see me, but I'm actually bowing to you right now in awe of your amazing talent.
I bow back. I return the bow.
Thank you. Yes. So, Joe, I was just telling our listeners how we kind of connected randomly online. Yes, ourfilmspace.com. If you guys are in the entertainment field, definitely you want to check it out. It's a great way to network. And we wind up, I don't even know how we hit. I think it was because of the Army pictures or something.
Mm-hmm.
We wind
up
connecting. So, Joe told me I have a script and he wanted me to look at it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Because, you know, I've gotten a few scripts in my day where I'm like, whoa, what were they whiffing when they wrote that? But I have to say, I was amazingly surprised when I saw your first draft. It was just amazing. So, Joe, you want to tell us a little bit about your background? How did you get into the acting?
It started in high school. I was coming home from swim team practice, and my buddy that I was in homeroom with coming out. I went to Xaverian, which is an all-boys Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking out of the gym, and I'm like, where are you coming from? He's like, oh, coming from a musical audition. I'm looking at all these girls coming out. Where'd these girls come from? They bust them in from Ursuline and Fontbonne. Like, all right. Do you have any more pots open? They're like, no, but you can work on the show. I was like, all right, that's what got me started.
This amazes me, Joe, real quick. I got to tell you, this is nuts. Isn't that amazing how girls will get you into anything? And you guys will go. My son went to cheerleading tryouts just because there was some girl he liked.
My goodness.
He said it was the one time a girl would let him touch her below the waist, and she wouldn't dope slap him because he had to not drop her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was the only reason he did it. So anyway, Joseph, this is how you got started. Yes, okay, this is funny. So what happened then?
Just did shows all through high school, and, you know, for a while I was in musical theater and thought that's what I wanted to do, and then, you know, just eventually through the course of my education, just kind of branched out, you know. I mean, I didn't want to really pigeonhole myself. I wanted to try as many things as possible. And, you know, when I was younger and I was always drawing and coming up with crazy ideas and stuff, so I was like, you know, there's got to be a way to incorporate all the different things I like to do. And my mom actually said that was one of my biggest, not really an obstacle to overcome, but, you know, it was like, because there's too many things I like to do, she's like, you know, I wish there were just one thing you could figure out. And then right before I graduate UMass Boston, I took a screenwriting class. I take a screenwriting class. It just all clicked. I was like, I got to make movies. You know?
Yeah.
And it just kind of made sense, you know, and then just fell in love with it.
But it's funny, Joe, because I noticed that a lot of creative people have that knack that they can go in different directions with their creativity. I mean, I've noticed that there's people that are actors, and they're also great screenwriters. They can be directors, photographers. I mean, there's a lot of creativity that they can channel in different directions. And I know for me, a lot of times people look at me with that, oh, my mom was one. Could you please focus on one thing? Kind of thing. And in her mind, it was focus on something that made money and paid bills.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And it just boggles my mind that a lot of people take it for granted that creativity is a way to make a living, and it's a way to be happy with it. And, I mean, your screenwriting skills is just phenomenal, because I've been around it so much that I kind of got jaded a little bit as far as some of the scripts that I've seen. So, And having been a teacher, and my English skills aren't that bad, I do get a lot of people say, hey, can you edit this for me? Can you read this for me? Whatever. And then I'm like, oh, sweet God, how do I tell this person very gently that, you know, this is just not going to work because it doesn't make any sense, or it's very gimmicky, or it's been done so many times that it's been done so many times kind of thing, and there's nothing new or novel about it. But your imagination, the way it goes, it's just amazing. Not only that, you have the acting skills to add to it. It was just phenomenal. Now, my question is, Oh, you're welcome. Now, my question is, the script that you created, what's the name of it, and where did the idea come for it?
The title, the current title of the project is Finding Buster Brown. Mm-hmm. And it began, oh boy. See, I've always got, like, you know, at least four or five running ideas in my head about movies. And
a man after my own heart.
they have, you know, each one has their own unique quality. Like, I labored for years and years and years over a movie that, you know, ultimately, hopefully, when it ever gets made, is going to be like a multi-million-dollar summer blockbuster, you know. And I just, mm-hmm. that was the thing. I was, like, hoping that that was, I was out in Hollywood for a couple of years. I was hoping, oh, I want to sell this script. I want to make $1 million. And, you know, I just, you know, had the dream going on. But, you know, like, my buddies kept telling me out there, it's like, write something you can do. Write something that you can actually shoot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this other idea in the back of my head because I was, you know, I went to UMass Boston. You know, my class was the last one to graduate under Billy Bulger. You know, his
right.
brother Whitey, we still can't find. So I always had this
now,
idea
real quick,
in my head.
Let me stop you, Riha. For the people that aren't from the New England area, because we are, nationally broadcast.
Oh, okay.
This is a good boy, bad boy kind of thing, where one brother was a politician, very influential, was in power. The other one kind of went the other way, very powerful, but through the crime family, he basically controlled the whole underworld in this area. And there was rumors that he was being protected as a witness by the FBI because he was giving people up. So, like Joe said, one disappeared, and the other one had to deal with the fact that people were looking at him like, there's no way you don't know where your brother is, kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, it was very big. For those of you that had seen The Departed,
oh,
kind of
yeah.
loosely based on Jack Nicholson's character mm-hmm. in that it was kind of based after that. Some of the things actually were very close to Whitey Bulger was and what he was about and how ruthless he was, minus the fact that he just get killed at the end because they can't find him. I mean,
yeah.
he disappeared, and for all intensive purposes, everybody assumes he's in witness protection or somewhere else. So yeah, so this is the backdrop for the idea that Joe had. Joe, real quick, I have someone going, yay, Jose Blanco, big fan. My job. You got some fans in there.
Our
listeners, if you have any questions for Joe, the call-in number is 347-989-1473, and we'll pass them through so you can talk to Joe. Or you can log on to our website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman, WMN for woman, and you can ask a question in the chat room or you can call through Skype as well. It's set up to be able to do that. So, yeah, Joe, continue. So you had this idea. You went to UMass Lowell, UMass Boston, and what happened from there?
I just thought, how funny would it be to have a comedy where, like, you know, you're in Boston and you're going all over the place and, like, you know, you're looking for Whitey Bulger and he's in one place, you know, in the background, he's in another place. And just like a Where's Waldo thing, right? And then it just
right.
sort of developed over a couple of years. And, you know, I started doing improv comedy out in L.A. with a great group of
friends.
Okay,
now real quick, you were in L.A. for how long?
4 years.
4 years. And did you get a lot of experience that helped you? What were some of the things that you picked up while you were out there?
Well, I did have one of my fondest memories out there is working the camera at a show called the What's My Line Live on Stage. Not to be confused with Who's Line It Anyway, but What's My
right,
Line?
Right, right.
A new live version of the old game show that was back on the 50s and 60s.
Oh, I remember that one. I remember, what was it, Soupy Sales or something in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my sister never missed that show, yeah.
And it was crazy. I was just, you know, I felt so blessed to be just in that audience, like, every week. And they have a panel of celebrity guests, and they would always have a mystery celebrity guest who'd come out. And, like, you know, we had Weird Al Yankovic. We had Larry King. We
wow.
even had Mike and Kitty Dukakis one night. It was crazy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And, yeah, there's a lot of improv comedy in L.A. That seems to be the way it used to be all about stand-up, but now it's about improv. So,
right.
But I could never really afford all the classes that they had going on out there. So I was like, you know,
yeah.
didn't really want to – I don't know, didn't feel like it was right at that point. But then a friend of mine said, hey, come on down to the Asylum Theater on Santa Monica. It's
mm-hmm.
$5 every Thursday night. You come and jam. You can, you know, watch. You can just hang out. Just check it out. And it was the Asylum Improv Jam. And I went that one Thursday in December. Oh, and I just never, I didn't stop. It was just like a religious thing for me. It was my my outlet. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing when I got started. And like, but the people who were, I just kept getting up on stage. And, you know, I was so fortunate to have such a great group of friends there who, you know, like the number one rule in improv is that you always support the people that you're on stage with. You know, you make, mm-hmm. you make yourself look good by making other people look good. And that was
absolutely.
And here I was.
I was
like a complete newbie, not knowing what the heck I was doing, and and everyone was just like, you know, all right, well, just, you know, here's what you want to do, and we'll help you out, and we'll run you through your ideas. And it was a good 6 months before I really kind of felt the groove, so to speak. And so with the combination of the improv and all the ideas I had in my head, I just thought, how funny would it be to have like a, and you know, reality TV is the big thing these days. How funny would it be to have a reality TV crew fly from L.A. to Boston trying to find Whitey Bulger, and then they, you know, and all the hilarity that ensues. And I was a big fan of, still am a big fan of Christopher Guest movies, Best in Show, Spinal Tap, and those movies, from what I understand, are mostly improvised as well. So I was like, hey, let's do an improv movie, you know, let's go to Boston and, you know, look for a gangster. And I would tell all my friends this, and they would be like, you're nuts.
Well, you have to be a little nuts to be able to create some of the stuff that we've created, as you can attest to, Von, where we were on Saturday.
Yep.
It gets me nervous now, knowing that that's a little glimmer of his imagination. That was the pandemonium I was talking to our listeners about earlier. Wow, that was an amazing, amazing show you guys put on. It was just like, oh, goodness.
If you think Lance is disturbing from the show, you haven't seen Sunshine Away yet, have you?
No, I know. It was so funny. It was one of these things I didn't want to see because I would be afraid to be in the room with him by myself, and I think I'd have to, like, you know, have Mace with me or something, because, I mean, just an incredible, and the thing is, if you see him, he's like the nicest, sweetest guy to talk to and hang around with, like the kind of guy mother would want you to bring home, but then you see what goes on in his mind. He's such a creative genius, and then to actually get it out of his head and put it in the real world and have it come across the way he did was just phenomenal.
I think every, like, horror, fright, suspense director, writer is really a nice person when you meet them. But, like, if you could open up a door inside their head, you'd, like, run away screaming, you know?
It's true. But, it's so true. But the thing that got me, too, is just the amazing talent that you guys are surrounding yourself by. Because I know for you, the first time we did the read-through on the script, that's what blew my mind, the talent that you already had around you.
Mm-hmm. There's a great community in Boston and in the New England area. I just, you know, I mean, one of the things that I always, like, kind of people, when I left L.A., they were like, what, why are you leaving L.A.? I'm like, well, number one, I wasn't really happy out there. I just kind of hit a wall out there, a tipping point, if you will. And number two, I was like, there's, you know, at any given point, there's three major motion pictures being filmed in my home state. I left there to go to California for that exact same reason. What am I doing here? And I just took off.
Right, and it's funny because we don't realize how funny life is, that here you are, okay, you did get all that experience, and you wind up right back where you started from, kind of like Dorothy. There's no place like home, you wind up back.
Absolutely.
And you wind up creating this amazing script, and we don't want to give too much away, but you want to give us the website so people can go see the trailer?
Oh, yeah, findingbusterbrown.com.
Yeah, and it was funny because just to see it materialize, the thing that got me the most is sometimes I'll read a script, and once the trailer comes through, it's not exactly the way I visualize it, but the thing that got me is that you guys pegged it. I mean, it was just everything, the way you created the character, the way, who was it, Doherty created the
Doyle.
Doyle created the FBI agent. I mean, it was just crazy. So you want to tell them a little bit about what they're going to see on the trailer?
Oh, well, it's so weird. What do we call it, a trailer? Do we call it a promo clip? We just figured, you know, we have this much resources. We have this movie. We can film this part.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually just went ahead and shot it. And we're using it to entice people with money, and they want to get them to give it to us so we can make the rest of the movie. It's the beginning of the film. It's the first part is what you see is actually the PG-rated version of all my fellow improvisers from Los Angeles that are cast in the roles of the Hollywood film crew, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot Films, and they are in the midst. What you're seeing is a production meeting that went horribly wrong. Their producer, their boss, is desperate for an idea, and they're just pitching horrible reality TV ideas. They drive him to suicide, and then they, leave town, and then next thing you know, they show up in Boston. They're looking for Buster Brown, and they disappear.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows what happened. So the head of the studio calls Ricky Revere, who's a civil and private investigator for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
I love that. Every time you said that during the read-through, I got to share this with the listeners. The way, well, never mind the other guys, too. When they were doing the read-through, I felt like I was already watching the movie because they were so funny. And every time Joe said that line, everybody just busted out laughing. Because it's just, the look on Joe's face, like he was just so serious. Like, yes, I'm a civil and private investigator. And, but the way he said it, it was just like hysterical. It was so funny.
I do have to give credit where credit is due, though. The character Ricky was created in association with another civil and private investigator from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy Steve out in Los Angeles, who currently works with the Family Guy organization. The original character, his name is Bob Waltham.
That's too funny.
In our years of goofing off and we would just create, he was Bob Waltham, I was Ricky Revere, and, it just happened that, with all this other story going on for Buster Brown, I just sort of created Ricky, and I threw him in that story, and that made it, kind of him being the narrative that you follow to find out what happens to the crew, and it just sort of all just fell into place, and it was really cool like that, but I can't take credit 100% for the civil and private investigator for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, because...
Oh my God, it's just so funny because me being a police officer, I can't tell you how many times I would have people just whip out some badge for security officer for Joe Blow's candy shack, and they're like, I'm so and so, and I'm like, and that's supposed to mean what to me?
I'm a trial court officer.
I know, and I would feel so bad because they were like, well, this is who I am, and I'm like, that's all well and good, but that badge is no more meaningful than, he's already, these people are trying to arrest people. You can't arrest people. You can't. You get sued if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was funny, and then it was like, you just created this character, and now that you say with your friend Steve, but to me, I've seen people that are like that. So this character was so real to me and my husband, too, because he's still a police officer. We would just look at each other like, oh, man, you pegged it. From the way the troopers acted to the way that the whoever the escort guy was, we won't give too much away in that, to Ricky Revere, some of the stuff he threw out. It was just funny. It was hysterical. And the other thing that got me the most was that you always gave that hint of Ricky not being that on top of his game, but like anything else, things aren't always the way they seem. And I mean, the way you tied up the loose ends, it's for people that are out there going, oh, it's a comedy. Yeah, it is, but once you're going to see it on screen, it's going to blow your mind because there's going to be a lot of action in it. There's a lot of great scenes in it. I mean, it's just, I love your imagination, Joe, and I'm glad you took the time to actually put it on paper because it's a great, I can't imagine a better way for you to start your screenwriting career than with such an amazing project.
Well, thank you.
No, I'm telling you, I have to give it where it's due because, I've read a lot of scripts. I love my son to death, but I've had to sit through some of his, I call them his Frankenstein moments, where you're like, really? What happened to this guy? And then you'd be like, dang, I forgot I created that character. Meanwhile, that guy's still sitting at the airport and no one heard from him again, including the guy creating him. He forgot about him. So I said to him, if you're creating the character and you can't remember him, do you think we're going to care about him? So for you to be able to actually take the time and actually make these characters real, where, I think I've read the script 3 or 4 times and off the top of my head, I can visualize them, I can see them, they're real, because that's how much time and effort you put into them. So I have a question, Joe. For people that might be interested in screenwriting, because it's a whole different beast from sitting down and writing a book.
Yep.
What are some of the suggestions that you would have for them?
It really just comes down to, I just guess, being bullheaded. I'm a big fan of Blake Snyder. He recently passed away, actually, not too long ago. But he wrote a book called Save the Cat. And he, you know, I've read, you got to read as many screenwriting books as you can just to understand the basic format of a movie. But Blake Snyder put it in such a way that, like, makes you understand, because he, you know, he's a produced screenwriter. He understands what it's like from to start out with nothing and to go actually start, you know, producing and then start, you know, seeing stuff get made. And he just said one of the, you know, biggest, one of the most prominent qualities of any writer or any creative person is just to be, you know, stubborn and persistent. You know, you just got to keep at it. I mean, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, like, you're, all the scripts that you read that weren't good, I've probably got, you know, 5 or 6 of them that I could throw in front of you and be like, did you write this? No.
You know, really, you have, what happened? You had an off day, honey?
What, you know, I mean, you have to, you know, what I really feel is that, like, you know, you have to, I don't know, it's almost like sharpening a blade, you know, and it, you have to keep at it, you know, just got to keep whittling it down, and you can't really quit on it, you know, because I've had people, I mean, I remember I used to work at the Sharper Image in the Glendale Galleria. And I had everyone who's in LA is like going to be in the business at some point, you know, or wants to be. So it's like, I had a, you know, coworker who wanted to read the script, and I gave it to her, and she prefaced her coverage is basically, it's an industry term of, you know, I'll read your script, now I'm going to give you 3 pages on it, what I think of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she actually, and her preface for the coverage was, I think if you want to make a living being a writer, you should start thinking about another career.
Oh, man.
And you know what, though? I was like, oh, no, you didn't.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And my reaction, obviously, was, you know, it hurt to hear that. But at the same time, you know, like, there were things that were wrong with the script. You know, there was something wrong. And the only thing that was going to change, and then, like, me complaining about her reaction wasn't going to change anything. But me learning how to become a better writer was the way to go. You know, that... And through that, just sticking with it, you know, and like, you write it, you have your inspired moments, and you just put it all on paper, and someone just says, no, it doesn't work. You just got to take it back and be like, all right, let's make this work, you know. And also then the, I think improv comedy, learning how to do that made me better at writing too. So I guess.
That's funny, because I got an email here. It says Jack1313 wants to know, do you think being an actor has helped you be able to create richer characters and settings for your screenplays?
Absolutely. It lets you understand what goes on the other end of it, you know, because, I mean, I guess it's a good thing to be on all sides of the workforce, I guess. Above the line and below the line, just to, you know, see how everything goes, so you understand, okay, I can write it, this guy doing this, you know, I can write this guy, you know, it makes you understand why people do what they do, you know.
Right.
And it gives you a better understanding of, okay, well, that he really wouldn't do that, you know, he really wouldn't put a gun to his head and pull the trigger because it's really not all that upset, you know.
Right.
In other words, but then you can create the conditions to make him that upset to pull that trigger. Everything helps, you know. Every little bit of experience helps.
So you've done improv. You've created this amazing script. What other parts of the industry have you been involved with and actually worked in?
Well, with Baker Street, those guys have been probably the most fun I've ever had in my movie making experiences. Granted, I don't have a whole lot, but, you know, in terms of just, you know, these guys, I would, you know, sit in traffic, lay in traffic for them, take a bullet for them. Like, we're that tight, you know. We're all, you know, we just finished a Pandemonium Inside Show, obviously, and then last year we did a movie called Third Shift, which was our first, like, indie feature, I guess you could say, that was, like, done, you know, we brought someone else in from the outside, you know, with their script, their idea. And we were just, you know, we were the hired guns that were bringing the movie together, you know. And we were there every day. We were first on scene, last to leave, you know, standing out in the rain, holding the lights up, just doing everything that we could possibly do to make this movie happen. Mm-hmm. And, it just helps to have that kind of connection with people, you know, especially in the creative environment where you really have to be able to trust people to take your
right.
work to where you want it to go.
You think that
right.
gives you a whole different respect and appreciation for the directors and the PAs, the production assistants, and all those people when you've actually done it yourself?
Well, yeah, of course. I think the Directors Guild has a requirement that you have to do like 900 hours as a PA. Something like that. Like they want you to, you know, get broken in. You know, they don't want you just showing up. Because like the other end of it is like in the movie making business, in the entertainment business, you got this contingent of people who think they can just show up and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I actually have one of those. My son, he's like, "Whoa, when I'm a director," I was like, "Honey, trust me, no one's gonna want to work for you with your attitude. You're gonna be directing yourself."
We do have a caller here.
Go ahead, Mountain Man. I keep forgetting Mountain Man's taking over the switch because I keep breaking it. I broke it 4 times, so I'm not allowed to touch the switchboard anymore.
Well, let me get this caller in here.
Okay, go ahead, Mountain Man. Get the caller.
Welcome to Diamond on the Rough. Who's this, please?
Shelly Nutsucks.
Shelly!
Hey, Shelly.
Hello!
I should have known it was Shelly.
Oh, man, yes. I love Shelly. Yeah, Shelly, like, knows everybody.
Yes, I do. If I know, like, someone, especially who is a fellow ninja lover. That's Joe right there.
Yep.
Oh, doing good. I was like, I heard Joe was going to be on the radio. I was like, I got to call and torture him a little bit.
Nice. Bring it on.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Oh, the last time I saw you, we were up Kowloon's dancing to Dancing Queen and doing some other stuff like that.
Wait a minute. It's a family show. What do you mean doing other? No, don't go there.
No. With some meat.
What about that? Wasn't that audition that we went to? What was that movie for? That we were just some random place in Chelsea.
In
the house. It was a gangster movie. Was it Oxymoron? Was that the movie?
No, I didn't. I couldn't go out for that one. Was it the restaurant? It wasn't. No. It wasn't Chelsea. It was in Everett.
Everett. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one for Rob Scally. Yeah. That was the last time I think I seen you. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Memory lane, why isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy. Oh, wait. Someone says in the chat room, Joe, I got to tell you this. Someone in the chat room says, you're one of the few people I've met who turns clothes pegs into a fashion statement and can actually pull it off.
Chat room, how do I get in there?
If you're in front of the computer, you just log on and then you can go into the chat room. But it's so funny that they said that. I'm like, that's definitely somebody that knows Joe. Yeah, so it's funny because Shelly actually just shared a short script that she wrote a little while ago, and we were looking at a couple of pages of a few minutes, and it's just crazy how much time and effort goes into writing a script. Joe, I have another question for you. Marty 2311 wants to know, how do you create a script from beginning to end and make it flow?
There is a standard format. It's kind of like a skeletal format, at least in Hollywood, that they like to adhere to. It's a three-act structure that you basically want to hang your story pieces on. And if you read the book Save the Cat by Blake Snyder, he actually tells you how to put it up on a board. And to basically,
so that's where that storyboard concept comes from.
Quick,
Joe, I don't mean to interrupt you before you keep going. Guest 3726, welcome. 3734 and 3744, welcome. Our guest tonight is Joe White. He's an actor and a screenwriter who has just written his first full-length script, which happens to be amazing, and I cannot wait to see it. And he's explaining a little bit about the art of screenwriting and how to get the flow going. And one of our listeners emailed us wanting to know how to create a screenplay from beginning to end and make it flow. So you're talking about the storyboards. So let's say you have an average person that maybe doesn't understand that concept. What are some of the suggestions that you would give them to be able to get that concept aside, like you said, obviously read Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. You've recommended a couple of times.
Hmm.
So that would be a good place to start. So you were saying, what are ways that they can actually get that story going?
Well, it always starts with an idea. It always starts with
mm-hmm.
a single idea. And then you want to find out, you know, why do we want to watch it? Why do we take yourself out of the idea for a second and figure out, okay, what's going to bring people to this movie? And don't think of it as a screenplay you're going to sell, because that's another mistake I was making when I was in L.A. As I was
right.
thinking, oh, I'm just going to make, you know, I'm going to get an option deal, and I'm going to make a couple million right off the bat, and I'm going to, you know. It's just, you can't think like that, because that will just, because you're not making a movie. You know, you got to put yourself
mm-hmm.
in the bigger, you got to think about the bigger picture. You got to think about making a movie. And you got to think, why are you going to want to see it? You know, why is anyone going to want to see it? My one of my teachers at UMass, a guy named Lou Roberts,
mm-hmm.
don't even know where he is by now, but he was a brutal curmudgeon, I guess you could say, but I loved him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he had a way about him that was just cut right through all the BS, and he taught a playwriting class, and he always shared this one story about how one, you know, young lady student was, like, handing him the story about a bunch of people sitting around in the bar talking, and I'm sure, like, you know, people have great time sitting in bars and, you know, sharing whatever they share, but he took the play and he just, out in front of the class, he said, "Who cares?" and threw it down on the desk. Who cares? He just, out in front of everybody, like, I don't care about this story. Why am I going to go sit in an auditorium and watch this story? And
mm-hmm.
the woman was so shocked and taken aback, she went home and actually wrote a short play about
mm-hmm.
people living in a nursing home and who cares for them. And it was like so,
mm-hmm.
like it turned out to be this compelling story, and she got an A, and I don't know what the rest of the story was, but it's just, yeah, that's the point. You got to find something that people are going to care about, that people are going to want to see, because it is a business, and, you know, you want to get people to buy tickets, and you want to make money off of it, and, you know, move on to make your next movie.
And that's actually very similar when you're doing fiction, too, because that's one of the things, I know one of my college professors said that. He's like, the premise of a story for people to be interested is there has to be a beginning, the climax, the reason why you want to read it, why you care about these characters, and then the conclusion, and it has to leave us with a good feeling or a bad feeling or whatever. But you're right.
Mm.
That was one thing that he also said. You have to care about what's happening to these people. Otherwise, people just tune it out, especially in our day and age where it's like, okay, next, whatever. We don't want to hear it anymore. So it is. It's very tough to be able to put that on paper. So you have the idea, and what, Joe, once you create these characters, how do you make it flow?
It's, how do you make it flow? I mean, it's just really, it takes draft after draft after draft. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who thinks, there was a great article. I will not read your effing script. I can't remember who wrote it, but that was the title. That was the title of the article, and it was a produced screenwriter who kept getting handed scripts, and he just said, you know what? He was so sick of the notion that because screenwriting doesn't require any equipment, any tools, any training to do, people think it's easy.
I read that.
You read that?
Oh, yes, and I thought the guy was, I wish I could swear, because if I would have, like, if he would have told me, like, no, he was telling people to F off, and I was like, didn't I write to that, and, like, a couple people responded, I go, you know, he was just saying, oh, I'll just tell you, I'm not going to read your effing script, but it's like, you can still be kind of saying, no, I'm not interested, because he was just mouthing off to people, and I was like, well, that's not right, because what happens if a kid comes up, you think it's going to be right for him to tell a kid to go F himself? I don't think that's right. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, that'd be like, you know, what happens if he was someone's, like, idol? If you know what I'm saying? And it's like, they go up to you and, you, like, it's like, oh, well, I'm not going to F and do this and F and do that. There are polite ways of saying no. Instead
actually,
of, like,
no,
you know.
So, you know, I kind of get where he's coming from, because for me, I get that a lot. Not only do I have to deal with really bad scripts, but I also have to deal with really bad songs, because my boys being in the music industry, we get that a lot. And it's like Joe was saying, that it's just the fact that people think that, oh, it's easy. I grab a piece of paper, I grab a pen, I write the story.
Mm-hmm.
And like Joe said, his mistake at first was, oh, I'm going to go sell a movie. And it's not that you're going to sell a movie. It's that you have to create a story that you really believe
mm-hmm.
in and are passionate about. And unfortunately, like Joe, you said earlier, you kind of felt crushed by what this woman said to you, but you also say, well, oh, no, you didn't. Whereas other people, they take offense to that. They're like, well, screw you. You know, who are you to tell me about my script not being any good? So it was kind of more of a sense of the fact that sometimes you have to be blunt with people because they don't get that it's a very hard business. And, yeah, the first draft you did, in your mind, it's an Oscar winner,
mm-hmm.
but it's really not because you're too close to it.
Yeah, you're going to go, through at least, you know, 8 or 9 rewrites before that script actually gets locked and goes to picture. And even then, when you're shooting, things still change.
I've noticed that.
You just hope that at some, you know, there is a point where it does emerge. I mean, the first draft of Buster, I didn't like it, you know, but I was just writing it to get it out and get it all, like, a structure up, you know, and then I was going to give it to people and just start whittling it down and, like, eventually things just, okay, that doesn't work. All right, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. I mean, the, without giving too much away, the Cambridge scene that was ripped from the headlines, if you will.
Yes.
I came up with that, like, the flash of a pen. I was like, because the problem was I didn't like what was in place before.
Right.
Because what I was trying to do was I was trying to write roles for actors that I was dreaming I could get. But the reality is you can't do that. You can't write for, you know, like I would love to get Christopher Walken in a movie because just to work with him would be awesome. But I can't write, oh, Billy Wonka is going to be Christopher Walken. You know, I'm going to write every line like he's talking like Walken. And it's just not going to work because what if he's busy that day and doesn't want to do it? I mean, getting Walken is difficult. I mean, just doing the impression is hard enough. You know, it's a little crazy. But anyway, you can't write for specific actors. So I was like, I need to replace that. So I just swapped it out. And look, I mean, you saw the reaction and the read-through.
We couldn't get through the read-through.
People are howling, you know?
And, I mean, these are people that, like, for our listeners, we're close to Joe. We know his sense of humor. We kind of know what a mad genius he is when it comes to comedy. And my husband, couldn't breathe. He was just laughing so hard, had tears coming down his eyes because he's, like, just freaking hysterical. He's, like, he just... And I was so funny because, like you said, not to give anything away, but one of the guys goes, oh, man, we're going to go to hell.
they said that a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, they did. But it was just hysterical. But the other thing, too, Joe, is the people you surround yourself with, because, again, like you said, you can't write for a specific actor, but the people you had there for the read-through made it come to life, and they were just doing a read-through, yet you could see where this is going to go and how funny it was. So it was a testament to the fact that you gave people lines that worked and were funny and that they could actually do something with. And I think, like you said earlier, that's one of the biggest challenges that screenwriters have. They forget that they need to bring life to these lines, so you give something that the actors can work with and make great.
That would be another thing I would say about what acting helps a writer do is knowing how lines work. You know, like I was just finishing up I just did a World War II short a couple of weeks ago, and as we're doing all the read-throughs, the director / writer was asking for suggestions, and like, you know, part of me says, oh, you know, I don't really want to do that, but at the same time, I go, I don't want to be, you know, crapping all over your work. At the same time, I go, if you just let me read out loud, you know, just kind of like freestyle it, I guess. And I actually wound up changing the line and really punching something up for him, and he was really happy with it.
That's very true. And I think for me, because I'm fairly new to working in this industry full time. I've been at it almost over a year now. And one of the things that gets me is that I can almost tell when a screenwriter has acted before and when they haven't, because the lines can be very stifling, very... I can't even describe it, but you know what I mean, where it's so hard to make them work because that's just not the way people talk. I mean, and people forget, and that's another thing that's important to remember. You can't write a screenplay the way you would write a book, a regular book, because you don't talk like that. You have to go from writing something the way people talk from the other way, where you're writing stuff the way people think in their heads, which is totally different. So, yeah, it's very challenging, and that's one of the other things that I liked about your flow and your style, that It was very easy to read. It was very easy to be conversational with it.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, actually, the promo clip trailer thing that we've got on findingbusterbrown.com, if you read the script and then actually watch what we shot, they're completely different. I mean, the ideas are there, the action's there, but I was on set changing lines as I went just because I'm like, I'm saying them. I mean, I'm thinking, like, we got to get the information out quicker. I can't just keep rambling on. I mean, for, one-sided phone conversation tends to lose its steam after a couple of minutes. So you got to keep things interesting. Right. You got to keep them doing stuff. You got to, keep adding stuff in, and that's, I guess, a key for someone being on set is flexibility. You always got to be ready to adapt and improvise to whatever happens, because as much as you can plan in pre-production, things can change at drop of a hat,
That's very true, and I've actually had the experience of working with someone that was very rigid, and they wanted it exactly. So after a while, it wasn't even acting anymore, because the actors, myself included, we were so worried about getting the quote-unquote lines verbatim mm-hmm. that we just couldn't breathe life into them, because it was not the way people would normally talk. And you could see the frustration in the director's face, because it wasn't coming out the way it was, and it wasn't until actually the assistant director said, why don't you just let them do it their way and see what happens? And then there was a big difference. There was a big difference in the flow of the conversation, the actions that went on. So it is. It's very important to be flexible. And, I mean, obviously you have actors that aren't. The Coen brothers that did No Country for Old Men are notorious for not deviating one iota from their script, and they've been able to do great projects. But I can imagine you have to see the caliber of actors that they have, too. So, yeah, it can be very challenging to be able to bring life to that script.
I get the feeling that I know Starscream wins.
Yes.
who is Starscream wins?
I have no idea. It's one of your wild fans. Yes, and it says, you're always willing to help anyone from an actor to a PA. That's one of the greatest things about Joe. And that's very true, Joe. You do have that. You're very... it's one of the things that I have to share. We only have 2 minutes left, but I want to share this with the listeners. One of the horror things that I kept hearing before I was in the industry was how cliquey people were, actors, and how me-ish and, cutthroat and all this. Nothing has been further from the truth. The people that I've met have been amazing, willing to give resources out, tips. They've networked with me. They've sent me in all the right directions. So, I mean, it's amazing when you have someone like Joe take the time to help and explain things and that kind of stuff. And it's a great industry to get involved with. And I obviously can't talk for California and New York because I haven't been there yet. But the industry in the New England area is just phenomenal. I'm just so blessed to be in it right now and to have someone like Joe. Joe, I'm going to have you come back on our show, update us on what's going on with Ricky Vivia and everybody else. And
to
all our listeners, yes, definitely. We're going to have you back the beginning of the year and tell us what's going on, because I know you've got some big work, big things going now with pre-production on the Finding Buster Brown, so we definitely want to hear more. Shelley, thank you for calling me and talking to Joe and being there, and to all our guests in the guest room. I had a couple more emails I'm sorry I didn't get to, but I'll make sure that Joe answers the questions and when we have them back on. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Joe, thank you again for being here. And
thank
I just want to remind... Oh, yes. Oh, there's my cue lady, 90 seconds. I just want to remember everybody, remember, Motivational Monday, hit hard, hit fast, do the things you want to do, and remember, do not let anyone ever take your dreams away, because you never know where they're going to lead you. Good night, everybody. Have a great one.
Word.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands tight, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I'm just bracing, I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
gotta make it global. Put my name in the book.